Welcome to the Maggie Williams Podcast, where we discuss hunting, travel, and outdoor adventures. Proudly sponsored by Rolling Thunder Game Calls, the sound of a new generation. Brought to you by Heavy Shot, industry leaders in shot shell ammunition innovation. I didn't come this far to miss. Lost Hat Company. Ask your other hat company what choke you should shoot. Get lost. And Ridgemark Retrievers, the trusted experts behind Kate's gun dog training. Find your mark.
What's going on, y'all, and welcome to another episode of the Maggie Williams Podcast. I am in Georgia once again. Really haven't left since my last one, but I am very excited to sit down and talk with Mr. Chad Wright today. He's a former Navy SEAL, a very powerful speaker, a motivational and just overall fascinating human being. So thank you for sitting down with me today and having me here.
Yeah, this is really cool, Maggie. We were just talking to how this worked out. It's like totally my style. You hit me up on Instagram like, 2 days ago probably, and you were like, hey, I'm in Georgia. You want to do a podcast? And I'm like, yeah. Thursday, this was my day off this week, and I love, this is how I operate. I love like impromptu, like we don't have to make this complex. We don't have to plan all this stuff out 2 months in advance. Like you reached out, it lined up, we sit down to have a conversation. I've never met you before, but it's really cool. You're obviously the real deal. You've been down in South Florida turkey hunting. I mean, that's something that I would love the opportunity to do one day.
You haven't yet?
No, I love Florida too.
Florida's a fascinating place.
Florida's one
to
of
be.
My favorite states.
It's and, incredible.
Yeah. Well, so I live on 600 acres of private land.
Wow.
And so it's hard for me to leave to go hunt.
Understandable.
When it's like I can walk out my front door and we've got tons of turkeys. We've got really nice whitetails. Of course, all the small game you could want. But it's hard for me to leave. But definitely one day I would like to hunt Osceola turkeys in South Florida just because it's a different environment.
If the relay is at all what I imagine it would be with turkeys, hunting in the mountains is incredible.
It is, yeah. And the birds up here, they gobble real well, so that makes it fun.
That's awesome.
I mean, obviously that's not the case all the time, but like I walked out of my house this morning and I could hear turkeys gobbling just all over the place when I walked out to my truck to start it up just to get ready to come to town. So they gobble good. Yeah, they're fun. The terrain features allow you to really be strategic and move around and kind of ambush. You know, you can ambush these turkeys by using these kind of ridge lines. And that's fun for me because there's a tactical aspect to it.
Of course.
It really is the same type of tactics that you would use in war, you know, to ambush these turkeys or to set an ambush for them. So, yeah, it's a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to this season. It hasn't started yet, but I'm not much of a duck hunter. I've been duck hunting 2 times, but my duck hunting is I have some wealthy friends that are like, you want to go duck hunting? And I'm like, yeah, and we fly up to, I think it was Oklahoma, and this guy has built this place where he's pumping water out of the river and he's built all these dikes and he's flooding, you know, his land, and the blinds are there and he's got all these buggies, and like you literally just take a buggy out to the blind and we have a guide there that sets all the
right.
It's like golf, man. It's like the golf of hunting.
Yes.
Like I could only imagine if you were doing all that by yourself and you didn't have a guide there. I mean, that's hard work.
It's a lot. I'm a fourth generation Arkansas public timber hunter, and it's interesting to have the perspectives of people that have never experienced that, because my definition of duck hunting is just completely different than theirs, you know?
Yeah.
So it's kind of crazy how your approach can completely dictate your view of the sport. Because for a lot of people, it is like golf. And for me, it's we're up at 2:30 in the morning at the boat ramp waiting to take off at 4 o'clock, and it's a lot of work, but it's a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Arkansas, I love Arkansas.
Really?
The best deer hunting I've ever participated in was in Arkansas. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. In the military, I was hunting in areas that I wasn't really supposed to be hunting there, but it was like a gentleman's agreement.
Right.
It was off the chain, man.
That's awesome. Yeah. I hear all kinds of feedback on the state of Arkansas, and most of it obviously is related to duck hunting, but that's interesting. You have a positive viewpoint. I love that.
Oh, yeah. It's a great state. I think we probably shouldn't be talking about it on the podcast because it's like a uncovered jewel of a state.
I think so.
I mean, you've got, what is it, the White River?
Yep.
You've got trout fishing. You've got some mountainous terrain. You're right there, like you said, in the flyway, right? So the duck hunting's good. It's got pretty much everything in terms of outdoor recreation, whether that's hunting or backpacking or paddling, or it's a really, really awesome place, and I love it for sure.
Wow, I love that perspective. You don't know this. I'm a former Miss Arkansas Teen USA, mm-hmm. and so I am a huge advocate for Arkansas. I love Arkansas. I'm proud to be from Arkansas. It's been years since I was ever a pageant girl, and you can probably tell by my posture nowadays, it's been a long time. But I'm very proud of it. And most people say, oh, you know, you've been trained to promote Arkansas, but it's truly something that I am passionate about. So I'm happy that you have that same perspective.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And like I said, we probably shouldn't be uncovered. The people of Arkansas probably don't appreciate us telling everybody how awesome it is, because then it turns into another whatever, Texas, you know, plays. Everybody has, it's been like mass migrations over the last 5 years out of California and, you know, northeastern states. It's like people are like, yeah, we got a good thing going here. We're not going to talk about it publicly because we don't want all you guys moving out here and ruining it for us. But
right.
Yeah, well, no, it's an amazing state for sure.
Absolutely. And I've seen a lot of that in Fayetteville. I do not go to the University of Arkansas. I go to Arkansas State University in the Delta.
Okay.
But the big school, Fayetteville, the Hogs, like everyone thinks of when they think of Arkansas, people from where I'm from call Fayetteville Little Dallas. Because there's been a huge influx of people from Texas just attending the school.
Okay.
So it's been a huge just increase of infrastructure and, you know, student population from Dallas just because Arkansas has become so much more popular in that area.
Mm-hmm.
But I've only been to that part of Arkansas twice in my life. So I think it's interesting. That's what people think of when they think of Arkansas.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot more to it.
A lot more.
For sure.
But you're a hunter. And I find this so fascinating because you are all over the internet, and that is not your brand. I had to do some digging to even figure out that you were a hunter. Tell me about your hunting background.
Mm-hmm. Well, the reason I will tell you about my hunting background, but the reason I don't make it part of my brand is because it's a thing that I have chosen to kind of like keep sacred,
right,
and not make it a part of my public image or my business in any way. And not that there's anything wrong with that. It's just like there's one or two things that I want to keep just as mine.
Right.
And don't want it to be for the world. And I think hunting has been one of those things. I started hunting when I was probably, I'm going to say nine years old, maybe a little younger than that. So far back that the only thing that I can really remember about my first hunt was being carried by my uncle on his shoulders down to a tree dog who had treed a coon.
That's awesome.
in a North Georgia kind of little swampy area in between two cow pastures. And that was how I got into hunting at a young age. I had an uncle who was a coon hunter, and two of my cousins, his two sons, Jacob and Kyle, Jacob was just a few years younger than me, so I was the firstborn child in our family, and Jacob was just after me. So I went along with them coon hunting at an early age, loved it. If you want to get kids into hunting, coon hunting is it. And it's really dying out. There's not a lot of people that do it anymore.
Right.
Which is, it's wild because it's such a fun way to hunt and to get new hunters involved in being outdoors and being in the woods. And it's entertaining and it's action packed. And that's how I started. And then as I got a little older, maybe 12 or 13, I started going deer hunting with them. And I just got hooked. I mean, I got hooked on deer hunting too. I mean, I remember as a 12, 13-year-old kid, I would get up in the morning with no complaints, you know, 2 hours before the sun rises, you know, and we're loading up in my uncle's old 79 blue Ford truck with that you could look through the floor pans and see the road under, you know, through the bottom of the truck. And we're driving out to the hunting spot and, you know, just back then, man, hunting was so much different back then. It wasn't an industry.
Right.
It was a good old boy, local community type. It wasn't an industry. And so, you know, we didn't hunt in tree stands. We didn't hunt in box stands. Like, we hunted with old Marlin lever action 30-30 rifles, and we sat in a freaking brush pile on the ground all morning, and you didn't see no deer.
Right.
Like, the places we hunted when I was a kid, like, somebody, you would hear word of somebody said, I saw a group of 5 deer cross that cow pasture at 9 o'clock a week ago. So then you went out and hunted in that spot because somebody saw 5 deer cross the cow pasture.
Right.
And you'd sit there all morning. And so I hunted for 2 seasons before I saw my first deer.
Wow.
Yeah. So my second season of deer hunting, and this is how hooked I was on it. I mean, I'm telling you, I'm going out here and sitting on the cold freaking ground all morning, waking up early as a young kid, and still showing up to do it, even though I'm not seeing nothing. It was just the chase. It was the anticipation, you know, being out there with your rifle. And finally, the last day of the season on the second year that I had started deer hunting, we get in the truck. It's the last day of the season. The morning hunt's over, and we're driving. We're in the truck, and we're leaving the farm that we've been hunting. So it's basically done, right? Well, it's the same old blue truck, the same old 79 blue Ford. We drive out into a cow pasture, and about 200 yards across the cow pasture, there's 3 or 4 deer standing in the edge of the woods. So my uncle stops the truck, and I jump out and throw the rifle down across the hood of the truck and take, and I just remember seeing hair in the scope. Like, and as soon as I saw hair in the scope, I pulled the trigger. Didn't know if I had hit anything, didn't know where I'd hit the deer. I was just so excited. And we get over there. There's no blood.
Oh, no.
My cousins come. You know, we all start looking for the deer. Finally, we find this deer. I'd hit the deer.
Oh, wow.
Right dead in the center of the chest. And it was a little buttonhead. But you would have thought, son, you would have thought I killed a Boone and Crockett record book whitetail.
It was,
I mean,
a big deal.
It was a ceremony, son. Like, you load this 70-pound button head onto the back of the truck and you take it back home. And back then, you know, you had the cross ties in the ground with the little, I guess they call it a gamble or whatever. You hoist the deer up on, you know, and all the family comes and you take pictures. And it's a whole day thing, man. You skin the whole deer, and, you know, then you don't even need to gut the deer. It's like you're just doing this to make it more of a drawn out ceremony.
Yeah, it's an experience.
It really is. And so that was my background in hunting, coon hunting and then deer hunting. And later on in life, in my later teenage years, I did get into turkey hunting, and that became a big turkey hunting and competition coon hunting. So I'm telling you, this has been my life. Like, this was my life. Hunting was my life until I joined the U.S. Navy in 2007.
Wow.
Yeah. And then that changed everything, obviously.
Of course. You know? Yeah. I really love how you shared your hunting background. And I've seen your podcast where you talk about adversity. And I love your viewpoint on adversity. I mean, you went deer hunting for 2 seasons without laying your eyes on a deer.
Yeah.
You know, I am known to say adversity makes for a better story. I love it. I mean, if we're turkey hunting and we're in the, you know, the mountains of Washington, wherever, on public land, you know, hiked 2 mountains that morning, whatever, haven't heard a gobble, haven't laid eyes on a turkey, whatever. You know, that's part of the experience. And so I hate the term hard hunting. I hate it. It makes me sick because hunting is inherently hard by nature. I mean, that's hunting. It's not killing. You know, it's supposed to be difficult because if it was easy, everyone would do it, number one. And number two, everyone would have success. And it's not easy. And so I think because there is an industry now, it's become so glorified that it is easy. Well, hey, look what I got. Everyone can do this. Yeah, everyone can do it, but it takes hard work and it's tough.
Yeah.
And so yeah. I think it's really cool that you shared that adversity, but I also love how you talk about adversity in your other podcast.
Well, what I loved about coon hunting, it is the most adversity filled type of hunting you can possibly endeavor to do. Like, people are listening to this and they're thinking that's a joke. Elk hunt's harder than that. Or no, man, coon hunting is no joke, dude. And really, coon hunting prepared me for SEAL training.
What?
I'm not kidding you. It really did. People think that's crazy, but when you take a high powered coon hound out to a, and you have to hunt big blocks of land.
Of course.
With a hound. You know, you're turning this dog loose on a 10,000 acre tract. And when you cut that dog loose, you got to go where that dog goes. And we're hunting the North Georgia mountains. And so, you know, you're going over ridges, through swamps, through rivers, through creeks. And it ain't over until you get to that dog. And you take that dog off of that tree. So you might be out there. There are many nights that we weren't done until the sun came up.
Right.
And then also you have to know how to navigate. Back then there was no GPS. When I started coon hunting, they've got all these electronic collars and stuff now, which I've used that stuff, you know, but back then it was nothing but the old beep, beep tracking collar. And you had a compass, and you paid attention to where the moon was and where the stars were.
Nobody was dropping you pins on Onyx.
No, and when you left the truck, you better have a bearing on your compass to where that dog's treed at, because that dog may be treed 3 miles, and you're not walking a trail to that dog.
No.
You're walking through the woods. You're not walking a fire. There ain't nothing where that dog's at. And so you have to take a bearing with your compass to that dog. And when you get to that dog, you have to turn around and follow your reverse bearing out to your truck, or else you're just going to be walking around out there all night long. So it taught me how to navigate in the wilderness at night. It taught me how to move through that type of terrain. It taught me how to deal with sleep deprivation and fatigue and all that stuff. So it's huge, man. It was a huge building block for me just in terms of mental toughness at a young age. And I was having fun doing it. That was the key. I didn't even know I was building this mental toughness because I was having fun doing it. It's like an adventure. Every coon hunt's like an adventure.
Yeah.
You know?
I think that's awesome. And that's very true. You know, you don't really realize you're building mental toughness. You're just doing what you want to do. You're just enjoying it. But, I mean, other people would look at that like, well, that's grueling manual labor for 4 coons, you know?
Yeah.
But it was fun. And so, I mean, that's there's so much truth to that. But you are known really for promoting your principles and your viewpoints on social media. Can you tell me how those principles kind of relate directly into hunting?
Yeah, totally. Well, the main pillars of my mindset, they apply across the board. It doesn't matter whether I'm running a 250-mile ultramarathon or I'm out on a, you know, a really tough hunt chasing a big old buck or, you know, a big gobbler or something like that. The first one is patience. So I have had to learn to be a patient person throughout the course of my life. Everything that we endeavor to do, whether it's kill a trophy buck or an elk or something like that, or run a 250-mile race or make it through SEAL training or start a podcast or start a business, everything that we do requires a process. And impatient people want to cut that process. They want a shortcut. It's like if you're hunting a turkey, it's like he's gobbling there, and you know that if you leave this little fire road that you're on, you can use the terrain to get set up on that turkey better. But that's hard, right? So a lot of times you want to shortcut it. You want to say, maybe I can stay with this trail or this fire road, and maybe I can get around on him to maybe get almost as good of, and then it ends up not working out for you.
Right.
So like everything, there's this process that you have to go through, and people want to shortcut that. They don't want to endure the process. And that process may be, and that's on all levels. It may be in terms of hunting. It may be just learning how to hunt. You have to understand something. If you want to get into hunting, you're going to have to accrue a decade of experience before you can go out and do it the way that you imagine yourself doing it.
That is so true. That is so true.
Yeah, so you have to be patient with that. You can't decide you want to become a hunter and think that you're going to go out and kill a freaking nice 12-point whitetail, 4-year-old whitetail buck. You might get lucky, but you probably won't. So you got to be willing to say, okay, I'm going to become a hunter. This is going to take me 10 years of intentional work and study and practice. And so you have to be patient to do that. The second one is the ability to stay present. You have to stay where... You have to be able to be where your feet are. You have to be able to freaking pay attention to what's right in front of you. Pay attention to detail. You can't be thinking too far ahead, man. If you think too far ahead in a ultra marathon, you're going to crush yourself mentally. You have to be able to stay present. Think about what's the next step that you need to take in hunting in order to, harvest this animal. Don't think 10 steps ahead. Like, think about the next thing that you have to do and then execute that thing perfectly.
Correct.
And then go to the next and go to the next. And so staying present. And then the last one is being deliberate with everything. The choices that you make, for me, being deliberate, it has a lot to do with my speech, I believe. The words we say and the way we talk about things, just like earlier you said, I hate the word hard hunting. Well, that's because you're paying attention to the words that you're using to describe a situation. And your words are powerful, man, and they can affect the outcome of your hunt, of your life, of your marriage, of your business. You have to really be deliberate about the way you are talking. It's a huge part of my life, and that has allowed me to do many, many hard things in my life. The Bible says the tongue is the rudder of your vessel, right? So your words are going to steer your hunt in a good or bad direction. They're going to steer your business in a good or bad direction, all those things. And then I think also just being deliberate, how does that apply to hunting? Well, you're out there with a firearm. Maybe you're climbing a tree. But you're doing all sorts of stuff that's inherently dangerous.
Of course.
And if you get complacent, you're going to injure yourself or injure someone else or potentially kill yourself or kill someone else. And I've lost a lot of buddies because they got complacent because they've done this thing 100,000 times. And they just think, it's just another rep. And I think hunting is the same way. Well, I've carried this shotgun, for miles and miles and miles, and I don't respect it as much as I should respect it. And that complacency will creep up on you.
Sure will.
But guess what? I know better than anybody, trust me, when that bullet leaves the barrel, you ain't getting it back. That's it's right. Going where it goes. And you better be deliberate about all of that stuff, man, or you're gonna potentially find yourself in a bind. Look, if you mess with firearms long enough, you are going to have one that goes off when you don't want it to go off. It's gonna happen. It's happened to me.
Mm-hmm.
And you better make sure that you're practicing the proper safety protocols, which would be the four laws of gun safety, so that if that or when that happens, you're not potentially going to kill yourself or kill someone around you. You got to be deliberate, man.
Got to be. And it's never happened to me. I'm a young person. I'm 22 years old, but I've seen it happen. I've been duck hunting since I was 10 years old, and I've seen it happen. And it's scary. It's something that you never want to be a part of. It's just, whether it ends in fatality or accident or not, it'll scare the lights out of you.
Oh, yeah.
But I love the way that you mentioned the power of words. That is something that is a very big part of my life. And I don't talk about it at all. It's just kind of second nature. Because I kind of learned this in pageant training years ago whenever I was a 16, 17-year-old girl. And you wouldn't think this would kind of relay over to something like hunting. But it's a huge part of my life. You know, you'll hear people say, oh, I'm such an unlucky hunter. I was at deer camp in Illinois last winter, and you know, I met a country music singer there, and he was talking about how he was just such an unlucky hunter, how nothing's going to walk out in front of him, how, you know, he's not going to kill anything, how he's just not a lucky person. And I was thinking, man, you just got off a tour bus, and you were in some of those beautiful country in America, and you're unlucky? You're unlucky to be there? And, you know, that's very common language used, you know, in hunting. I'm just so unlucky. Every time I get to walk outside and enjoy God's creation, I consider myself a lucky person. Mm-hmm. Whether I have a turkey over my shoulder or a strap full of ducks, or whether I didn't fire a shot that day, I'm so lucky to experience that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm always just happy to be here. I always say, you know, I'm thankful, grateful, blessed, highly favored just to hunt.
Yeah.
And so whenever you have that mindset, whenever you use words like that and you're intentional with it, you are, number one, I think, more successful.
Yeah.
And I think, number two, you're a happier person.
Yeah.
And things do work out more in your way. And if they don't, you don't dwell on it, like, you know, vice versa.
Exactly. No, it's so key, for sure. It's so key to your success and your enjoyment. And it's just really, really powerful. And people don't, people have, this concept of your words being powerful has obviously been around for thousands of years. It's a biblical principle. There's nothing new under the sun. This wasn't my idea. But it's something that I discovered for myself by way of doing hard things and realizing that when I chose to complain, things just kept getting worse.
Absolutely.
But when I chose to, even if I didn't feel good, when I chose to speak good, things got generally better.
Yes.
And so just take control of your rudder in all situations. And it's most important when things do get extremely hard. And it's interesting to me, people talk about, you know, going back to what you said about, I'm just unlucky. I don't ever see, I've been hunting hard. I just don't ever see nothing. I don't get the opportunities I want. And it's like, I think those people, they're also, their perspective is skewed in a way of, dude, hunting is, I'm not going to say it's not at all to do with you actually harvesting the animal, but like, for me personally, that is a very, very, very small percentage of the reason why I'm out there doing what I'm doing. And maybe that's the reason that hunting has been such a sustainable thing for me, is because I don't care. I, as a matter of fact, at this age, the older I get, the less I like killing things.
Mm-hmm.
And so now, like, it is, and it always has been about the friendships, the best friendships I have, the most lasting, meaningful friendships that I have in my life came from hunts.
Yes.
The best stories I have came from hunts. The memories, the strategy, the chase, that is what it's all about, man. It's like I'm almost at the point in my life where I would rather just try to count coo on a turkey than actually kill it. Like I was telling Cornbread, like this season I might just see how many, if I touch a turkey, that counts as a kill, right?
Like, yeah. Yeah, I think it counts.
Yeah.
But I think that's awesome. And that's so true. And I do see that. The most of the time, I mean, people that have hunted more in their life, the older they get, the less they do desire to kill. And I went duck hunting with a 98-year-old woman last winter named Gail Camp. And my podcast listeners, they know Miss Gail's story, but she didn't want to even hold a gun. But she was content with not. And that's a huge disconnect I see in generations. And it might just come with age. I don't know. But for me, at a very young age, duck hunting was always about getting to hang out with my dad and my dog and eat candy bars before the sun came up. It wasn't about getting to show up and pull my trigger, because that really wasn't what I was, you know, there to do. Yeah, that was the goal, but that wasn't what it was all about. It's the same way for me when I'm chasing turkeys. I'm not there just to show up and pull my trigger. That's not where the satisfaction comes from. You know, to me, turkey hunting, you know, is about the chase. It's what it should be. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not like a deer. You don't get to, you know, go for the biggest bird or the most prized trophy, because the trophy is the experience along the way.
100%.
The interaction with that turkey, calling him up, watching him, hearing him, being able to play the game with him. And that is something that I think lots of young people, and there are, you know, middle-aged people and older people that also feel the same way, but it seems to me that the younger generation really struggles with understanding that's what you're there for.
It's becoming more and more the only reason that I hunt, because I just less and less desire to harvest an animal, not because I have any moral opposition to it or anything. It's just, I don't know, man. My heart has gotten really, really soft, like, over the years. I'm not going to lie to you.
I think it's awesome. I think it's awesome for a big, bearded, tattooed guy to admit. I think it's cool. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love to pull the trigger.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun, and I enjoy it, but I think that's an awesome perspective.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very cool.
It's interesting. I didn't expect it, but that's where I'm at.
There you are.
Yeah.
And so my listeners are obviously outdoorsmen. It's just people that hunt. Can you tell them about what the 3 in 7 project is? And really, I mean, what does 3 of 7 mean?
Yeah, that's a great question. The 3 stands for body, soul, and spirit. I believe that we are created uniquely out of all creation. The one thing that makes us unique is we were made in the likeness and image of God. So we have a body, we have a soul, which is our mind, our will, and our emotions, basically the seat of our intellect. And so all other creatures have those 2 things, body and mind, but we are uniquely created with this 3rd aspect that is our spirit. And it's this part of us that can actually be in relationship with our Creator, can be filled and energized by the power of the Holy Spirit of our Creator. And He can actually live in us and with us through this life. So 7 is the biblical number for completion. So everything that we do here at 3 of 7 Project revolves around trying to become more physically healthy, mentally resilient and strong, and also really foster that relationship with Christ Jesus, our Lord, through that spiritual connection that we get to uniquely partake in all of creation. And we do that by way of podcasts, YouTube, but the pinnacle of what we do is we train people, live training. It's like this weekend I'm running a course called the Basic Course. I've run this course for going on 4 years now, where we take a small team of people out into the wilderness for 3 days, and we teach them every single skill that they need to learn in order to live out there.
Wow.
And along the way, you know, we're moving, we're covering ground, and along the way we're being intentional with our time, and we're talking about spiritual things, and it's physically hard, it's mentally fatiguing. So it has all 3 of the, it has all the components to really develop those aspects of the people who are out there training with us. And that's my passion in terms of my professional life is teaching people. That's my passion, is teaching. The last about 3 years of my career in the Navy, I was a SEAL instructor, and that's where I learned that I love to teach. And so I've just carried that passion now into 3 of 7 Project and designed and developed these very specific and repeatable training missions that people can sign up for and come out and participate. And that also allows me to get to spend real time face-to-face with people.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's our superpower, man. It's like, you know, there's obviously tons of personalities on YouTube and social media now, but, you know, you're rarely going to have the opportunity to actually walk through something hard with that person that you might follow or you might watch or you might look up to online. And I'm accessible. Like, you want to come do something hard with me? You can sign up. Like, come on. We're going to go spend awesome. 3 days in the wilderness together. I'm going to teach you everything that I know, and I'm going to walk with you through this, and I'm going to suffer alongside you.
Wow.
You know? So, I've built relationships with literally, you know, I'm going to say now it's going to be close to the thousands of people, like real intimate relationships doing hard things. And so that's 3 of 7 Project.
That is incredible. And I had an idea of what 3 of 7 Project was, but I had no clue. Whenever you said that, I realized I had a very basic understanding. Holy smoke, that's incredible.
Yeah, we're really blessed. We're really blessed. It's the Lord has blessed it. I mean, we started this in 2020, really just as a response to what was going on with the global sickness and everything was getting shut down. And I was like, we got to do something to bring people together. And we started doing these training missions and, you know, podcasting and all this stuff. And it's like, I don't know, it's just snowballed. And it's been a lot of work, don't get me wrong.
Of course.
But yeah, I would be disappointed if it wouldn't have been hard.
Wow. That is awesome. And I saw you post about an 8-hour race. Can you tell me some more information on that?
Yeah, that's a race that we put on, and that's just once a year. If you want to participate in it, you'll just have to follow me on Instagram because we never know when we're going to do it. When we decide to do it, I'll talk about it on social media. But yeah, that's an 8-hour trail race that we do. And the reason we put on a race is because a big foundation of, you know, who I am publicly is tied into ultra running. And I started ultra running in 2018, and I'm pretty good at it. I've done races anywhere from 250 miles long across the high mountain desert of Arizona to
wow,
last man standing races. There's an amazing documentary film on Amazon Prime. It's called Just 1 Mile. It's a documentary of me running a last man standing race where you basically start running and only one person finishes because you keep running until everyone else quits. And there's an amazing documentary on that on Amazon Prime. I think it's the best piece of content that was put on Amazon Prime last year, period.
Really?
Yeah, it's an amazing film. So if you want to see what that looks like, and if you're a hunter, you're going to be able to watch that, and I think you're going to be able to take some things away from that. In that film, I ran for, I think, 34 hours, and I was ultimately the last man standing, ran for 34 hours straight.
Oh, my gosh.
Ended up climbing. That was a really hilly course. I think I climbed, I want to say it was probably somewhere around 38,000 feet of elevation gain. So way higher than Everest. Everest is 29,000. So a lot of climbing, a lot of descent, the same amount of descent over the course of 34 hours and, I don't know, 130 something miles. So it's a great film.
That's unbelievable. If I did not know who you were, I wouldn't believe that when you told me. That is absolutely incredible. And it's motivational and inspiring because, you know, as a hunter, I've never been an athlete. I'm not an athletic person by nature. I wasn't gifted by the good Lord to be coordinated at all. That's okay. But I have become a more athletic person, a more capable human just by chasing animals in the wild. Mm-hmm. I mean, last year as a college student, I mean, I was going to school and I'm almost done. Lord willing, I'm almost done. But, you know, I was a junior in college last year and balancing schoolwork, traveling, working, and hunting, I walked 350 miles, which isn't a lot to someone like you. But for me, that was huge, just in 10 states chasing turkeys.
Yeah, yeah.
And so if you would have told me that in high school, someone who hated running, didn't really like, you know, intensive physical activity, it's hard. They'll push you to your limits. But I think it's incredible that you can do that. I mean, I'm sure, you know, you have sources of motivation, but unless I'm chasing something, you know, I can't keep going.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that is incredible that you can.
Yeah. And for everyone listening, you have to understand that, you know, if you dedicate yourself to being as fit and healthy as you possibly can be, and your passion is hunting, your fitness is going to positively impact your ability to hunt and to be successful, but also to just feel good and just enjoy yourself when you're out there. So, you know, everything's intertwined. Your physical health is going to make you a better hunter. Your mental toughness is going to make you a better hunter. Your spiritual life is going to make you a better hunter because you're going to understand and appreciate creation on a whole nother level. So everything is intertwined, man. And just get after it. Like be deliberate and take the time to do those things in the off season. And you don't have to get crazy like me. Like, you don't have to get crazy, but do something to make yourself better. I say sweat every day. You should sweat every day.
I love that, and I agree with that. I think I'm happier. The days I get to sweat, I'm happier. I'm more content.
Yeah.
I have less to complain about. Even though I did something harder than a comfortable day where I didn't do anything, I totally agree. I sleep better. Just more pleasant to be around.
Mm-hmm. Me too. Trust me.
Totally agree. I think that's awesome. And I wanted to ask, what is the biggest thing you've taken away from hunting? Before, outside of, you know, SEAL training and your incredible mission that you have carried out, what's one thing that you've taken away from hunting alone?
You know, that. So I was gonna answer the friendships, but from hunting alone, the biggest takeaway, for me, it's got to just be the intentional quiet time that I have in the backcountry. Like how many other times are you going to go sit still in the woods for 6, 7, 8 hours? Like, if you're not deer hunting or turkey hunting, you're not going to do that. Right. You're not going to make time for that. So when you go out and you sit still in the woods, things happen.
It changes your brain.
Yeah, it changes your brain, and you also see things that are magnificent that you would never see. Because here's the thing. I spend a lot of time in the woods running, right? But anytime you're moving through the woods, you're disturbing the entire environment around you. It's almost like, picture there's this bubble around you. And it, as long as you're moving, everything that's part of that environment, it goes, kind of stops and goes into hiding and waits for you to pass. So you never see it. But when you go and you just sit there, like you see the it comes alive. Like you see something as simple as one time I was sitting in the deer stand and I watched a squirrel for 4 hours come out of a tree, go to the ground, get a mouthful of leaves, go back up the tree, pack them in his hole, come back down. He did that for 4 hours because there was a cold front coming. And I just watched that and I was like, holy smokes. I'll tell you a weird thing. I was sitting in a tree one time, man. People aren't going to believe this. This is sound like some weird stuff. I'm just going to tell you what happened. I was sitting in a tree one time, and I'm sitting in this tree with my back against the tree. It's an old oak tree. And I'm telling you, there's something that happened. I could feel the energy of that tree, like the life of that tree.
Really?
Like I could feel that in my heart, like, almost like it passed through me or into me, like, and it was happy. It was a happy thing, but yeah. But those trees are alive.
Yeah.
Those trees are alive, just like every other organism that you're sitting and watching. Like, don't think that their life is any less complex or important than the living thing that we're, like the deer or the turkey or what. Those things are alive, and they communicate, and they have, in a sense, consciousness. So you're just never going to experience those. I would never experience those things the way I have and seen the intricacies of God's magnificent creation if it wasn't for what hunting has forced me to do, in a way. Sit still.
Absolutely. And I'm a huge advocate for hunting, and I have been for years, but at the end of the day, you know, hunting to me is a very emotional, fulfilling activity. And it's hard to explain without to somebody who's never experienced it, because it's so powerful to be a part of, watching something in its element and them to have knowing idea that you're there.
Mm-hmm.
It's beautiful. But there is so much more to hunting. You know, some people are never going to be hunters. My sister, God love her, incredibly intelligent human being. Just got her master's degree. She's brilliant. She's had the same opportunity to hunt as I did growing up, just not a fan of firearms, not a fan of killing things. And that's okay. Not everyone's meant to be a hunter. But I think if we were able just to get more people outside to experience these things, the world would be a better place. Because I have seen recently, so many people do not have the ability to put their phones down and just see the world for what it is.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, and I work from my phone. I'm blessed. I think these phones are wonderful creations that have enabled people to do so much more with their lives. Thankful for it. But it is also so crippling to, you know, our critical thinking skills, mm-hmm. our social skills, and our ability to sit outside and, you know, without entertaining our attention span for 8 hours.
Yep.
And so, you know, aside from going out and killing something, that part of hunting where you're just sitting there and you're present and you're in God's creation and you are just a part of the crowd whenever you're out in the woods, not moving, just watching, being a spectator, that's such a powerful experience. And I wish more people would realize, hey, if you don't want to kill something, don't. But go hang out in the woods for 12 hours. But
man,
unfortunately, that's kind of what it takes, is that motivation for most people, you know, to hunt. It's what it takes for me.
Yeah,
If I wasn't a hunter, I wouldn't do it.
Yeah, because there's so many other things that you could be doing that seem to be more productive. And you're exactly right. I mean, most people, I'm going to say definitely the majority of humanity never experiences quiet time. So one of the things that I will actually do if I'm training a group of people, I have an exercise that I do, and I call it a vision quest. And all it is I force them to go and sit in the woods for 4 hours. And they're not allowed to have their phones. They're not allowed to take anything with them but a bottle of water. And they just have to sit there. That sounds so, like, to me and you, it's like,
great,
that's
afternoon.
Awesome.
Yeah.
But for these people, like, I've done this with big corporate groups of people and not even city folk, just people in general. And it's like, that scares the daylights out of them.
Right.
Like, it's extremely scary. And then they go out there and they do it. And the amount of stuff that they have to confront in themselves and the stuff that comes up and that gets uncovered just by way of sitting in the woods quietly and not having anything to distract yourself. These people come out of this, like, just bawling their eyes out.
Mm-hmm.
That's, like, that's the majority of humanity. That's their existence.
Right.
They never stop. They're afraid to stop. They're afraid of the quiet. They're afraid to sit still. But we were designed for moments of stillness and of quiet. We were designed to have those moments in our lives on a regular basis. But we are living now as part of this false reality that's been created by man in this false environment that's not in any way, shape, or form congruent with the natural way that man was supposed to live. And it's sad. It's really sad.
And I think once people start to do it, and in my experience, it's addicting. If you would have asked me in high school, and I hunted all the time in high school still, but I would have considered myself an extrovert. I was very outgoing. I was a pageant girl. I was the picture of somebody that would talk to anybody. And I still am very friendly and outgoing. But the more time I spend alone outdoors, the more time I crave, the more I become introverted. It's addicting. It's peaceful, but it changes the way you think and perceive the world, and you no longer need that constant interaction. You don't crave that constant, you know, outside stimulation from your phone, from other people. You're content with the aloneness.
I have to do it.
I have to do it too.
Yeah, and I almost have to do it on a daily basis, to be honest with you. And it might not be 4 hours, obviously, but like I have to have time in my day on a daily basis that's quiet time outside. And yeah, it's just regenerative. It's recharging. It's an amazing tool that we've just forgotten about.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And I wanted to ask you about what exactly the proving ground and rite of passage was. What is that?
Yeah, so those are two other training missions that I put on. So the one we're doing this weekend is the basic course. That's a 3-day wilderness course that's heavily skills-based and also heavily team-based in terms of learning techniques of leadership and communication and how to move as a unit or a single organism across extremely hard terrain while living out there. It's completely unsupported. And then, so the rite of passage is a different training mission. It's essentially a 24-hour hike as a team.
Wow.
So we start on a Saturday morning, and we walk through the mountains for 24 hours straight. You're not allowed to stop. You're not allowed to sit down. Nothing for 24 hours straight. And it's a transformative experience. If you've never been out there, and if you've never went through an entire day and an entire night, it's like experiencing life in a day, because you go through all these different emotions and you have to, there's a lot of quiet time out there, right? You're with a team, but there's a lot of quiet time, and you experience a lot of pain and discomfort, and you have to work through those things and continue to move for 24 hours. The reason I created that was because the 100-mile race, the 100 miles is a pretty popular distance in the ultra-running world, and that 100 miles generally takes you around 24 hours to run. If you're good, you can do it in 15, 16 hours, but for the average ultra-runner, 24 hours for a 100-mile race is a good distance or a good time to set. Well, I know that not everyone is going to aspire to run 100 miles, but the thing about a 100-mile race, the part that makes you grow the most isn't the distance you cover. It's moving through that entire daylight and darkness cycle.
Wow.
That's where the growth comes from. And most people have never done that.
Right.
You know, without sleeping or stopping.
Of course. I haven't.
Yeah. And so it's just an opportunity for you to come out and experience this, what it's like. And you come and everybody comes out the other end of this thing with different things that they learned about themselves or different ways that they grew, or everyone has a different story out the other end of it. But for everyone that's a part of it is impacted. It's difficult. Every time I instruct that course, I'm out there and I'm with you. And I'm like, you know, it gets around 3 in the morning, that kind of witching hour, you know. And I'm like, dang, why am I doing this? Like, there are easier ways to make money. Like, why didn't I just make an extra YouTube video this week?
Right.
But then I get to the end and I see these people just changed, like, deeply by this experience they had. And you can literally see it on their face. Like, we do before and after pictures. And I'm like, this is why I'm doing this. This is why I'm putting myself through the pain. And I don't need to stay out for 24 hours. I've done that hundreds of times.
Yeah, a lot.
but these people need someone to come alongside them.
So they don't stop.
So they don't stop. And so that they have some safety net. And that's the purpose that I serve. And then the Proving Grounds is a 2.5-day mission we do here in North Georgia. It's way different in terms of we're not in the backcountry. You're sleeping in the bed at night. But it's super intense. And what makes it different is because we do have a climate-controlled environment that we can move in and out of. We can push really, really hard while we're outside, and then we can pull back and get into that climate-controlled environment and reset. But at Proving Grounds, it's in-depth land navigation, it's team building, it's all types of outdoor skills, with some other things that I couldn't even explain to you what they are. You just have to experience them along the way. But yeah, those are the things that we do. And then, I run usually a few advanced missions every year. We usually run those out west in some really extreme, inhospitable environments. And we take the best of the people that we trained during the year in those other three missions, and we select them to go out on these advanced missions where the stakes are higher.
Wow.
Yeah. And, that's how we conduct our training.
That is unbelievable. And that is, I'm floored. I did not realize how in-depth that was. But I'd be game to do probably the 24-hour one. That's pretty cool.
You would love it. Yeah, you would absolutely love it. And, yeah, it'll make you a better hunter.
I believe that.
It will open your eyes to what you are capable of.
Right.
For sure. You'll come out of there with a whole new realization of, okay, I just did this. Like, I've really been cheating myself, you know.
Right.
I can do more. When the hunt gets hard, or that bird's gobbling a little further, or it's real early in the morning on that duck hunt and you're putting those, it's like, okay, this ain't that bad. Because yeah. I now have that memory banked. And so what I'm doing now is not as bad as I used to think it was.
Of course, you know? Yeah. And I'm someone that I live to hunt. I mean, I'm number one, live to obviously share the name of Jesus Christ. But number two, I'm there to hunt. That's generally my calling in life. I have decided it's what I have to do. It's not what I want to do. In order for me to be a happy human being, I got to do it. And, you know, it's never taken much to push me to that. But I've realized, you know, it's been mental toughness that I have incurred over the years that has made me able to chase it. And I just think, wow, if I did something like 24 hours, I don't know. I'm very intrigued to try something like that. But I've also seen you talk on the ability to execute, and that directly relays to hunting. Can you kind of share some of your opinion on that?
Yeah. Well, I had the epiphany as a young Navy SEAL pretty early on in my career that we're going to find ourselves in situations in this life where we have to make hard decisions, and there's not going to be someone there to tell us what to do.
True.
And that's our default. Until you learn that that's the reality and you accept that that's reality, until you learn that, you go through life and even out on a hunt, and you'll find yourself in a situation where a decision needs to be made, and no one's there to tell you what you should do. Like, no one's there as your safety net. No one's there as your mentor. No one's there as your boss to tell you this is what you need to do. And so what most people will do then is they just stand still.
Yeah.
They just become paralyzed because they're fearful to do what needs to be done, because they're afraid to make a decision because they might make the wrong decision. But what they don't understand is making any decision that's at least going to move you in the generally right direction is better than just standing there paralyzed in fear.
Yes.
So the ability to execute is all about the ability to assess your situation, whether you're on a hunt, whether it has to do with your business, whether it has to do with your workplace. Maybe you don't own a business, but maybe you work in an environment. You understand how much your boss is going to love you If you will be the person who executes, who looks at what's happening and sees something that needs to be done, and instead of waiting to be told what to do, you just take the initiative to do it, like, your boss is going to love you, right?
Absolutely.
And in entrepreneurship, it's huge. I mean, it's huge. No, dude, Maggie, no one is ever going, like, no one's ever going to be there to tell you what to do. You have launched out to start your own thing, and the success that you've had up to this point is because you've had ideas, you've looked at your environment, you've saw things that you could do or do better, and you've chosen to act upon that.
Right.
And that's what's led you, that's what's led me here to the point that I'm at today. And dude, everybody, look, it's never going to be comfortable, but you just ultimately just have to execute. Just do it. I started this podcast with a freaking $75 USB Yeti microphone 5 years ago, had no idea what I was doing, felt like a complete fraud, like an idiot, and look what it's become. Like, it's never going to be comfortable, but make a decision and execute, meaning take action, instead of just standing there in stagnant fear. Because if you stand there in stagnant fear, you're not ever going to go anywhere.
Absolutely.
I mean, so that's what it's all about for me. I mean, that's the story of, it's the story of my life.
I love that perspective, and I've never heard anyone put it into those words. I was extremely blessed. I've got a great support system at home, my father and mother both. But my daddy always told me growing up, my dad is a businessman. He was formerly the mayor of my hometown, but just overall great leadership skills. And he always told me growing up, a leader is someone that can make a decision and be content with handling the consequences, whether it's right or wrong, being able to move on. But a leader is someone that can make a decision, whether it's good, bad, or ugly. You got to make a decision and lead people.
Yep.
And then be able to obviously, you know, dictate, well, how are we going to move forward if I've messed up?
Yep.
And that's so true. And I've learned that hunting, you know, I've taken a lot of new people hunting. That's been one of the biggest blessings of my life, is introduced people to hunting and the outdoors. But you'll see so many people that are hesitant. Oh, I didn't want to blow my duck call in. I didn't want to, you know, yep. I didn't want to call it that turkey, or I didn't want to move in on that turkey, or, and it's like, well, you've got to be able to make that decision and overcome, you know, whatever obstacles are in the way because you made that decision, mm-hmm. or continue with success because you made that decision. But I didn't realize how important it was until I became an adult. But I heard my father say those words all the time, and I kind of took them with a grain of salt. But I'm, you know, I was extremely blessed, and I always said that, you know, I had a very bossy mother. Well, I've turned out to be a bossy daughter. I'm just like her. We are identical. But I, you know, value now, that is a woman that can make a decision.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm thankful to have those characteristics from her now.
Man, that's so powerful, Maggie. And that's a big reason why I looked at you. So when you hit me up to come on this podcast, I get invited to do podcasts all the time. But I looked at your show on iTunes, and you have over 500 reviews on your show on iTunes. And if you're listening to this, you should go leave Maggie a review right now on iTunes, because it helps the show and it helps her stand apart as a professional in her business. So you should go and do that for her, because it only takes you 2 seconds and you're getting something from the podcast. So you should give her something in return. But I looked at that and I was like, okay, she's legit. Wow. And that's why I took this interview with you. And, but the fact that you had your father and also your mother to set that example for you, and you paid attention to that, and then you realized that as an adult, how that actually plays out in life. Like, now that you have that knowledge and you know how it works, and you know that that is the reality, like, your growth as an entrepreneur, as a hunter, it's going to be limitless. Like, I think that you are obviously, you have a really good start, but you're just getting started. And see, I probably realized this idea of executing and making a decision around the same time that you did, probably around 22, 23 years old. That's when I had the realization that this is the way it is, man. And if we're going to be in the mix and we're going to be successful, we got to be willing to do this. And, you know, I liked what you said. I think you can make a case that even making a bad decision is better than standing still.
Absolutely.
Because if you make a bad decision, you're going to learn something from it. So then it's going to help you moving forward. You may have to pay the man.
Yeah.
You're going to have to deal with the consequences, but that's okay because you're going to learn something from it. And ultimately, that's going to then allow you to move forward better than you would have if you would have just chose to crouch in stagnant fear.
I totally, totally agree. And now that I'm a young woman almost out of college, I can look back now on, you know, bad decisions I made as, you know, a teenager in high school, whatever. And it's like, I can see how they've impacted me as an adult and how I've become a better and stronger human because of it. So mm-hmm. I totally agree with that. But thank you. Thank you so much for being on my podcast today, Chad. You've been an exceptional guest. I knew you would be, but holy smokes, you're an awesome person to talk to and to learn from. And I thank you for sharing this time with me and my listeners. And I really, really appreciate you having me here.
Yeah. Well, you know, Maggie, I'm a little bit, there's a little part of me that's upset because I would have loved the opportunity to interview you for the 3 of 7 podcast. So
I'm here.
Yeah, I know. So I got to thinking about that when you reached out to me and I started looking at your content and I was like, man, she's doing it, man. Your content's good. Your photography's good.
Thank you.
Captions are good. Your podcast is good. You're out here hustling, man. You're making it happen. I mean, you're hustling, you're traveling, you're reaching out to people, you're putting yourself out there. Like, that is uncomfortable. Like, there is nothing easy about putting yourself out there and about hustling and entering into public life. It's not freaking easy.
No.
And so I commend you for what you are doing, and I just want to encourage you to keep going, and I'm going to be watching, and I'm going to really be rooting for you and excited about seeing your success and where that goes as you move forward.
Thank you so much, Chad, and I'll be keeping up with you and 3 of 7, and I look forward to seeing where the good Lord takes you as well.
Yeah, me too.
Well, thank you so much, and thank you guys for listening. I give all the glory to the good Lord, and I'll see y'all soon. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the Maggie Williams Podcast. Join us each and every time right here where you catch your favorite podcast. And if you've missed an episode, well, it's a podcast. You can go back and catch up. We'll catch you next time right here.